Good morning. It is Sunday, March the 31st, and this is Ask the Mayor. I'm Chris Duffy, joined as always by Mayor Patrick Taylor. And Mayor Taylor, when I tease this show on my normal morning show, I say we talk about everything happening in town hall, around town, and things outside of town that affect the town. And the first issue I'd like to discuss today is one of those outside issues. And this really goes actually to the federal government level. And that is, we seem to be in what some people are calling an H-2 visa crisis. These are the visas given to temporary workers that come in typically for seasonal work and make up a large part of our seasonal workforce here in Highlands. And it seems like those are not being handed out the way they used to be.
That is correct. And it really could impact our whole economic situation here on the Highlands Plateau. And, you know, I like to kid what happens in Raleigh, i.e. the legislature, doesn't necessarily stay in Raleigh. It impacts us. Same thing can be said for Washington. What happens in Washington and the current administration can impact directly what we're doing here in Highlands. And the H-2 visa system has been a guest worker system that many of our country clubs and hospitality companies and a lot of different businesses have relied on this guest worker program, especially during our peak tourist season. And what has happened in Washington, they have cut back that program drastically to where now some of our major country clubs and businesses can't bring in those needed workers for the season. And I know that some of the country clubs already put out notices to their members that this could be a potential problem. So I just wanted to make people aware of it. You might want to let our Congressman Mark Meadows know that this is a real problem. And let us not confuse this with illegal immigration, which seems to be a big topic in Washington right now. This is a guest worker program. People apply, they get a visa. They're sponsored by a company to come and work for a defined period of time, and then they have to go back to their country. And if they follow all the rules, then they can come back and do this again. And the responsibility is not just on the guest worker. The companies also have a responsibility to make sure that everybody follows the rules so they can continue to qualify for this program. But right now, that program seems to be dwindling, if not being eliminated. So I, for one, don't want to see us lose our edge on our economic development here on the Highlands Plateau. So I hope that this can be corrected and we can bring these folks in who want to work for us, and we need them to work for us.
Mr. Mayor, this past week on Wednesday, we had a crisis of a different sort here in town. There was an accident out in the Norton area. A dump truck hit a power line, and that power line knocked out power, that accident knocked out power to a wide swath of the plateau and the entire town of Highlands. It actually came back on a little bit later than they originally predicted, but faster than was thought it was going to take to restore. So kudos to Duke Energy and all the folks that worked to make that happen quickly. But there's something people who live in town and in the county can do to make sure they're apprised of these kinds of emergencies, kept up to date, and other things too.
That is correct, and that is everyone needs to sign up for the Code Red system that Macon County Emergency Management operates. And you can go to the website for Macon County, and there's a link to sign up for Code Red. And what that does, it gives them your contact information, your email address, and your telephone number. And if there is an emergency like this massive power outage last Wednesday, then they send out a message notifying everyone of the situation. It's not only for things like power outages, but if there's bad weather coming in, a winter storm or something that they think you need to know about and prepare for, they send those advisories out. So I encourage everyone to do the Code Red procedure to be on that system. And that's what we use to notify our customers in Highlands. And it is kind of interesting. Some people at first thought it was Highlands that had lost power and we could do something because we're our own utility. But we depend on Duke Energy to supply us with the wholesale power that comes in on transmission lines. And then we operate and distribute it on our network, our electrical system. But we're dependent on that supply of electricity coming in on major transmission lines, and one of those, unfortunately, was shut down with this terrible accident that happened, and we just had to wait until Duke could get the power restored. And I know they had a real challenge because that truck was on fire, and they could not really start the process of restoring power until the fire had been put out and the vehicle removed and so forth. So it's one of those things that happens from time to time, and I'm glad that Duke was able to respond the way they did.
Mr. Mayor, you had your town retreat this past week, and I understand it was a very productive session with a lot of new projects on the horizon for the upcoming budget.
Yes, I opened the retreat by saying, you know, this is mislabeled. This is not really a retreat. We're at the, you know, Presbyterian Church. We've ordered them takeout lunches from Mountain Fresh, and then we sit there all day doing budget planning. It's more like an all-day budget planning workshop. And yes, it was a good day for identifying the needs for the community and how we will develop our budget for the coming year.
And what are some of the projects that are on the budget horizon? I understand that we could be dipping well into the town coffers in the next little bit.
That is correct. We start this process by our town manager basically giving us an update on where we stand on our revenue and our budget and so forth. And we were meeting all of our projections for this year. There are no real discrepancies in our lines or deficits. So that's good. And also, we have very strong reserves. We maintain reserve funds in what we call the general fund budget and also in what we call the enterprise funds. And each one of those funds have about $4 million in reserve. I like to characterize it this way. Right now, if we had some kind of a national disaster, an emergency, and we had no revenue coming in whatsoever, those reserves could keep the town of Highlands operating for about 6 months without any, you know, disruption, so to speak. But that's really not what it's for. It's really to help us address needs that pop up during the year, and we've had several this year, and also helps us manage our capital needs for the, you know, coming years, and it helps us avoid going into extensive debt and borrowing. So it was good that we had those strong reserves reported to us, but also I think it's time to start spending down some of those reserves, and I told the board that, because we've got some critical infrastructure needs that need to be addressed as soon as possible. So if you'd like, I can go over some of those items that were presented.
Absolutely.
One of the first things that we talked about is the sanitation department and the problem we have with bears. And as you know, we discussed this at one of my mayor's coffee about becoming a bear-wise community. And I think there's strong support for that. And there's a clear path to achieve that goal. And part of it is changing the way we collect our garbage. And the problem was, as we discovered when Lamar Nix of Public Works made a presentation, it will cost money and it will require all of us to change the way we handle our garbage. Lamar brought in these Barracuda toters that are bear resistant. They are the Cadillac of bear resistant garbage cans. Just really wonderful. Problem is, a 95-gallon toter costs about $375. A residential 65-gallon costs about $300.
Wow.
So it's very expensive. And we had a very good discussion, what do we do next? And how do we implement this? And how will it affect, you know, garbage cost and the way we pick up garbage? One of the things we will probably look at for the coming year is to invest about $120,000 in replacing the commercial toters that we currently use and go toward these bear-resistant toters. The current toters are very cheap. They're about $70 a piece, but they're not bear-resistant. So that would be one thing we would do in concert with putting bear-proof street cans in the business areas. But then when we get to the residential areas, Lamar informed us for the 2,500 residential customers, we're looking at probably $800,000 if we were to try to address that by requiring everybody to use a bear-resistant toter. Right. And there are a lot of secondary problems, too, about where you put them, how do they're picked up, and so forth. The other thing that was driving this conversation is also, right now, we have a very informal hodgepodge of ways that people put out their garbage. And I talked with the sanitation people at the end of the week, got their perspective, and he said, Mayor, there's some people just throw their garbage in a trash can and just set it out. They don't even put it in a bag. Mm. And then there's some people just throw bags on the side of the road and expect us to pick it up. And we need to, first of all, look at our ordinances on how we place residential garbage on our streets. That's the first step. Maybe we can kind of motivate people to voluntarily do better bear-wise practices in handling their garbage. And then look down the road at how we really fully implement a comprehensive program. But I don't think it'll happen this next year. I think it'll have to be done in phases. But also, I think we're going to have to look at some ordinances about the way people can dispose of their waste.
All right. Well, we'd talked a little bit about that before. There are some other things we'd mentioned, too. We talked previously about potential repair at the water plant that had kind of cropped up just in the last little while. And now it looks like this is something that has kind of escalated.
It is one of those situations where we did not anticipate this. And that's why we're so glad we have a reserve, because we've got to address that issue now, and we are. And we've got to address it in the coming budget year and even beyond that. And we're going to have to throw money at it. We can't play around. And Lamar Nix gave us a report, and it deals with, we have two big million-gallon filter systems at our water plant. And we have in this system a kind of a grid of grates and so forth that has what they call media in it. And that is sand and other types of materials that when the water goes through it, it filters the water. It's really the last phase of the process. About 3 weeks ago, we noted immediately a problem. And here's how this happens. As the water that's been filtered goes out into the tanks, there is a monitoring system that's real time. And if there's any change in the turbidity of the water or any kind of things that's unusual, it sets off an alarm. And then the state is monitoring this system too. And we have 15 minutes to respond. Our water plant operation got an alarm and immediately realized that something was not working on this filter and there was a slight change in turbidity. So he shut that filter down and switched over to the other filter that was functioning just fine. In the next day or so, they drained that filter and started looking and trying to ascertain what was the problem. And basically, there was a breach in the containment area that holds the media. Very small, but enough to set the alarm off. And as the water plant people and our town engineer, Lamar Nix, became involved, they also brought in the company that had built this system for us. And the system is supposed to work for at least 15 years. Well, this problem has occurred after 6 years, which is very problematic for the company and for us. But what they did was remove the media, and they've discovered that we're going to have to rebuild that filter system. It's going to cost $160,000. We voted at the retreat right there on the spot to appropriate from reserve funds $160,000 and get started on it without delay. And the reason is each one of these filters can handle 1 million gallons a day. Right now, we've switched over to filter system number two. They normally work, by the way, in concert during the day, but we're now filtering our water through that one functioning filter. And while we're making the repair, we've got to get that first filter back online before the summer, because during the summer, we might have to be processing 1.5 million gallons of water.
Right.
So that's why we can't delay. And then after we get both filters back online, sometimes next year we need to shut the functioning filter right now down and go back and rebuild it too, because we anticipate it not lasting much longer either. So that's going to be another $200,000. And then Lamar informed us that there is a space next to filter system number two for a third filter. And he is recommending that in the next 2 years, we appropriate $1 million and put in a third filter unit. And the reason, he says, redundancy in the water plant is important. So we have two now.
Right.
But this has made him think we need triple redundancy because we just can't, you know, play around with the loss of these filter systems.
Right.
So that's kind of illustrates how, you know, yes, we have reserves and a problem can just pop up out of the blue where you have to spend that money without delay.
I understand talking about some rather large ticket items in the six-figure range. There's quite a bit of paving that needs to be done around town, and those projects can add up pretty quickly, too.
Yes, they can. And before we do the paving, let me just run down another area, and that would be our water line situation.
Right.
We need to replace the water line, a little 2-inch inadequate 50-year-old galvanized line on split rail. It'll be about 3,000 feet of water line that we're going to have to install. That cost will be about $875,000. We've known about the problem for a number of years. When I first was briefed about the problem, it was going to cost $675,000. But now with our delays, the price is going up. And the other concern is we can't delay much longer before some residents would be out of water. So that's a priority for the budget for next year. But that's over $750,000,
yeah.
But it has to be done. It's none of this, well, we'll just not address it. We've got to step up and correct that situation. So we have that. And then, as you said, we have paving to do. You'll see 5th Street in Carolina Way being paved around April or May. That's already been appropriated. Satula, it will be paved after we complete our water tank installation. That has been going slow because of the rain and some issues with the foundation requirements that we want to make sure is exactly correct. So in this next budget year, we will be paving Satula. But then there's Colasagia for about a mile and a quarter from Highway 64 on down to the lake. It's in real bad shape, especially with this bad winter that we had. So that's going to cost some $250,000. Hickory Hill, again, is in bad shape. If we pave that, another $240,000. And then Oak Lane, $50,000. You know, the list goes on. And we will be addressing those kind of issues very soon. And that's why I'm saying, yes, we have good reserves. But, you know, I have urged the board as we plan for the budget, do not be afraid to allocate money from those reserves to address some of these critical issues. And then I can segue into one other area, Chris, that we talked about at the retreat. Also, rebuilding and building a new fire department. We had a presentation by Chief Gearhart and Josh Ward at the retreat. And here's our situation. We have a nice fire building that we've had basically since the 60s, and it must be upgraded and redone. We've talked about actually finding land and building a new fire department, but the cost of land, I think that's pretty much off the table at this point because of the expense of land and location and so forth. The fire department folks and the town manager and a committee met with an architect just recently, and they did a charrette, kind of a rough drawing of what could be done in the fire department. And it would mean bringing the fire department out closer to the street, going up with a second story, and retrofitting the entire department. And some people might say, well, why do we need to do this? Well, there are several reasons. One is firefighter safety. Right now, we don't have a real efficient way to clean all the gear and equipment after a fire. we don't have a good exhaust system in the fire department, and especially with the research that has been coming forth about cancer and firefighters, how they are exposed to such carcinogenic materials in the fighting of a fire, that there's a high rate of cancer among firefighters. We've got to address those issues without delay. So here again, we appropriated $60,000 at the retreat to get the architect started on drawings. I know at the end of the week, the town manager and the fire chief and other folks were going and visiting other fire departments in the area to see what kind of designs they have. But we've got to do that. And then another thing we need to do is to start moving toward having a full-time firefighter present at the fire department 24/7. Mm-hmm. We're really behind the eight ball. The folks in Cashers already do this. People in Franklin do it. And we need to start moving in that direction too. Not that we'll move away from being a volunteer fire department, but you've got to have people there all the time ready to respond. That's the new model. Mm-hmm. And all of this is going to require a tax increase in our fire tax. It's probably going to be going up by 1 cent. And I say this, I don't like to see taxes raised, but the truth is we have an unbelievably low fire tax right now, probably one of the lowest in the state. And to achieve all of these things, we will need to increase the fire tax. And with that, it will help us hold down fire insurance rates or even lower them. So it's something that I know some people might not like, the idea of paying more taxes, but these are kind of the things that we really need to do for the protection of our firefighters, and it also benefits our ability to respond to these emergency situations.
And you can't put a price on safety.
No, sir.
Well, that was certainly quite a bit, but were there any other items that came out of your retreat?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Chris, because, you know, in the past, and it's interesting how budget priorities shift. Mm-hmm. You know, in the past retreats over the last few years, we've spent a lot of money in recreation. We have kind of met all the goals of upgrading our recreation department mm-hmm. to where the only thing they're asking for pretty much this year is to resurface a couple of tennis courts. And then we'll go back and do the others the following year. The police department, for example, there have been times when we've had to spend money with the police department. Their request is basically to replace one police car that's, you know, got triple mileage, you know, over 100,000 mm-hmm. miles on it now. And then they have another request for police equipment, which is about $32,000. And in a way, that's kind of a forced mandate in that the state, especially the State Highway Patrol and first responders, are moving toward what we call a Viper radio system, where they create these special towers and they can talk between agencies and so forth. And those Viper radios, the police are requesting 12 of those. They're about, I think, about $2,000 a piece. But that's something that we just will have to do because right. the whole state is moving toward that system. So most of the things from other departments were just kind of continuation and upgrading type of needs. But we really did cover the big ticket items, you know, with the public works and the issue of sanitation and the Bear Initiative and paving.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I know after the retreat, you had your community coffee on Friday, and I take it much of that was talking about what happened at the retreat. Was there anything else that came out of that community coffee?
Yes, there was. And one of the things that I did right at the beginning, you know, I'm a potter, and I make coffee cups, and I thought it was appropriate. I gave a gift of 2 coffee cups to Karen Hawk, who is our librarian in, you know, Highlands at the Hudson Library. She has always worked with me for the last 6 years in coordinating these community coffee events. It's not something you just say, oh, we're having a coffee and it all comes together. It mm-hmm. takes a lot of planning and work, and Karen has just done a great job of doing that. And I wanted to kind of show my appreciation by giving her this gift of coffee cups that I made. And she'll be retiring from the Hudson Library this coming week. And I just wanted to really pay tribute to all the work that she has done, not just at our community coffee, but all of the nonprofit groups that she works with throughout the community. And then also her expertise as a librarian of great knowledge at the Hudson Library. So I wish her well. I hope she enjoys her retirement, and she will be missed.
Well, on that note, we wish her luck as well, and I thank Mayor Patrick Taylor for joining us this morning, and we both wish you a pleasant Sunday.